Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
A real live nephew of my Uncle Sam, born on the 4th of July.
The example of our two nations says it is possible for people to be united by their ideals instead of divided by their differences. It is possible for hearts to change and old hatreds to pass. That it's possible for the sons and daughters of former colonies to sit here as members of this great parliament, and for the grandson of a Kenyan who served as a cook in the British Army to stand before you as President of the United States.
You know, I just thought yesterday he was Irish. Just 2 days ago he was visiting his ancestry in Ireland, and now he's the grandson of a Kenyan. You know, this is starting to sound like we have Zelig in the White House. Welcome to the Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255, you know what I'm going to talk about. It's about Michael Savage being banned by the so-called fake conservative government of Britain. I want to start with a dream because my subconscious and I are on good terms. We speak to each other regularly. Most people are afraid of their subconscious. Most people block their subconscious. Most people are terrified of their subconscious, take drugs, drink alcohol in order to suppress their feelings or their subconscious, if you want to put it to you that way. But I've been in self-analysis for well over 40 years, if not more. I started at age 18 doing dream analysis, taught my children how to do dream analysis. I do dream analysis, and I constantly think about what I'm thinking and think about what I'm feeling and try to put two and two together. Many years ago, a professor friend of mine said, you know, Michael, you're one of the only people I've ever met who's totally in touch with his subconscious. So let me begin with my subconscious. But before I do, I want to thank a few people. Times like these tell you who your friends are. My friends are Joe Farah of WorldNet Daily, Matt Drudge of The Drudge Report, Chris Ruddy of Newsmax, and the list more or less ends there. There have been almost no articles other than on these major websites about the banning of free speech. However, I'm pleased to tell you that a liberal constitutional scholar by the name of Jonathan Turley, who I never met, who disagrees probably with everything I say or most of what I say, wrote a fabulous article on the ban of Michael Savage, and it's worth reading. If you're a liberal, why don't you take a look at what Jonathan Turley has to say before you gloat over the fact that the guy that you don't like, Michael Savage, has been burdened with this big lie. Now on to my dreams, because I have no control over them. Okay, you want to hear it? Because here's where it's coming from. You say to yourself, well, what makes you fight? What keeps you fighting? How do you do it? Why do you have so much fire? Why do you care? Why don't you just say, the heck with England, screw them, you're not going to go there anyway. Why are you fighting? I had a dream early in the dawn hours, close to dawn rather, that my silent brother, my deceased brother Jerome, who never spoke a word, never walked a step, I don't think he ever saw anything either. My silent brother was accused falsely by someone of committing a crime. And it was a white male accusing him of this crime or these crimes, and he was sneering as he was doing it. He said, your brother did this, your brother did that. And I said, wait a minute, he couldn't have done that. He was in a wheelchair. He couldn't speak, he couldn't walk, he couldn't do anything. And the guy continued to sneer at my brother, my silent brother, and said, no, he committed this crime, he committed that crime. And I said to him, you're a liar and I'm going to prove it. And when I'm through proving it, I'm going to slay you. And I woke up in a start at dawn. And then I realized something. I realized why I fight. I fight for those who can't speak. I fight for those who may have a voice but who are silenced by our society. I fight for myself. Do you understand that I am you and you are me and we are all one together, to use the old Beatles song? Take it for what it is. Laugh at it if you want. I know there's a lot of cynicism out there. I understand that. I understand it's very hard to distinguish between what a guy is telling you is truth and what is made up. But the fact of the matter is, I've been tried, convicted, and punished without a trial in the land that gave us the Magna Carta. This is right out of Orwell. And all liberals grew up reading George Orwell. But now that they're facing George Orwell, it doesn't matter, because it's not one of theirs who received the bad news. 1-800-449-8255. Then I had another thought. I was laying in bed from about 4:30 in the morning, trying to think about getting up for the day and what I wanted to do on the radio today. And my mind was spinning. Darwin called it spinning headedness. Today they call it a medical condition when you can't control your thoughts and they put you on medication. I got up and did push-ups. It always works. There's no need for medication from spinning headedness. It's called a bright mind that has many thoughts. But many of you are afraid of a mind that starts to work. That's how your mind starts. It's how an engine gets turned over. Don't you understand this? It's not an illness. Your mind is turning over. It's like starting an engine. So what you do is you stop the engine from turning over, and you start the engine, and you start to think. You get up and do push-ups and focus on which one of those thoughts you want to work on. Remember what Henry Miller wrote? Each morning I wake up and a thousand paths open before me. You can go in many directions any day. You have to decide where you want to go. It doesn't mean you're crazy because you have a million thoughts. I learned this 40 years ago. It doesn't mean you're nuts because you have many ideas and many thoughts. It means you're pretty smart. You choose which road you want to go down. No one's controlling you, you know? So then I'm laying there, the mind spinning, and I'm trying to focus on something to calm me down, and I can't focus. And all of a sudden, the words Jesus of Nazareth come in my mind. And I don't want to turn this into a religious show. And I said to myself, you know, Jesus of Nazareth is a philosophically important concept. Let's put aside the religious connotations of the word Jesus. But Jesus of Nazareth is an idea, the same way all prophets are ideas. Do you understand what I'm saying to you? Now, I understand hundreds of millions of people on the planet have peace through their religion, the religion of Christianity. When they think of Jesus as their personal savior, they become calm. They can face anything. They can walk through a storm. They can take a hail of bullets, and they have the strength that they need. But when I say to you, Jesus of Nazareth entered my mind without my reaching out to find that concept, I'm telling you something else. I'm telling you that there is calm in the middle of the world, and I know that there's the hand of God in all of this. So I'm very calm today, to be honest with you. I've been working since 5 o'clock this morning in trying to formulate what I wanted to say to you. Now, I can read you Jonathan Turley's article. I can read you the Great World Net Daily article. I can read you some other articles written about the story. And I may dip in here and there, but frankly, I think one from the heart is far more meaningful for a radio show, which is a medium of spontaneity, if it's anything else. A medium of spontaneity. If radio is of any value whatsoever, it's a medium of truth and of spontaneity. Now, my monologue is pretty clever. It's entitled From a Nanny State to a Banny State in One Generation, B-A-N-N-Y. Yes, England has become a banny state. It's a bizarre and interesting fact that the land of the Magna Carta has gone from what we call the nanny state into being a banny state. They don't like what you say? Really? Well, if you're not a citizen of England, you're banned. Did you know what's going on in England right now? Do you know that there's a police unit right now in England run by Scotland Yard that is blurring the line between criminal investigation and a doctor's clinical decisions? Scotland Yard runs the shadowy unit, and it refuses to discuss how many suspects in England have been forcibly hospitalized by this team of thugs because of patient confidentiality. Are you aware that England has now become like the ex-Soviet Union, where they're arresting people under the guise of psychiatric treatment and putting them into hospitals under the Mental Health Act? Do you know that they're being put into prison hospitals in England? You don't know any of this. Instead, you want to listen to the grandson of a Kenyan cook tell you his malarkey. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Again, I want to thank Matt Drudge, Joseph Farah, Chris Ruddy, and all the others who have seen the bigger picture. I'll be right back.
Savage.
While we cannot stop every injustice, there are circumstances that cut through our caution. When a leader is threatening to massacre his people, and the international community is calling for action.
Now, let's stop right there, Mr. President. You said when a leader is threatening to massacre their people, that's why we went into Libya. How about Assad in Syria? He's not threatening to massacre his people. He's actually massacred 1,000 people. How come you and the brave Mr. Cameron don't go into Syria? Why is it you're killing the Libyan army and trying to kill Gaddafi? What has he got on you? What are they after Gaddafi for? And why won't they lift a finger to protect the people of Syria and the people of Iran? Does anyone have the answer to that? Don't call me. We all know the answer. It's all dog wad. That's all it is. It's all dog talk, all of it. It gets even stupider in clip 22. I don't know who his speechwriter is, but this is really idiotic. Listen to this one in 22.
From Newton and Darwin to Edison and Einstein, from Alan Turing to Steve Jobs.
Wait, let's stop for a minute. Steve Jobs is equal to Darwin, Newton, Einstein, and Edison? Did I miss something in translation? We know that Al Gore almost flunked natural sciences, which is why he adheres to the religion of global warming. Okay? But for the president of the United States to put Steve Jobs in the category of Newton, Darwin, Einstein, and Edison is beyond comprehension. But then again, it's England, isn't it? And it's Obama, isn't it? One day he's Irish, and the next day he's the grandson of a Kenyan who served as a cook in the British Army. We don't know whether we have Zelig in the White House or somebody even more interesting. New York, Ellen, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Looks to me like in your dream you got the leftist liberal sneer, big time. It took me a while to figure out what was going on until I started investigating it. It's called the liberal snare, and you got it in your dream, big time. So you're right on line.
Well, it was like a Larry David, perhaps one of the most vile men on the planet, probably one of the most evil people in America, who poses as a comedian. But Larry David's Brooklyn sneer is probably what you are referring to.
No, no. It's a generalized thing that's going on. It's called the liberal sneer.
Whatever it is, it doesn't matter to me. They can sneer all they want. You know, in putting together today's show, I stumbled across an article from, was it from Beowulf? I forgot already where I found it. Vanity Fair. About Arianna Huffington being sued by her former cohorts. They're suing her because she made $300 million on a sale and gave them nothing. So the leftists who work with Arianna Huffington to create what they thought would be a counterpoint to the Drudge Report. They wanted to create a left-wing Drudge Report, and it talks about how the site was created as a result of a meeting that took place in Huffington's Brentwood Mansion in 2004. What I was stunned about was who they listed was at that primary meeting to create the report. And number two, they met in order to elect Obama. I forget the name of the group, 114 or something like that. It had a 14, 16. It was a number of days left until the last election when they foisted Barack Hussein Zelig Obama upon us. In this core of evil leftists are the following people. Are you ready for this? Larry David and his environmentalist wacko wife, Lori David. David Geffen. Movie producer, Brian Grazer. Screenwriter, Aaron Sorkin. Norman Lear. Almost all of them stem from the same neighborhood in Brooklyn, New York, so far as I can tell. And all of them hate America, in my opinion, with a vengeance that's incomprehensible. It borders on the pathological in terms of their hatred for this country. Now, this D-list of the Hollywood left met at Huffington's mansion together with an individual named Peter Dio, who's suing Arianna right now. He's a political consultant. And who is Peter Dio? Listen to this. He's a former member of the Lebanese army turned far-left political consultant. That's right. A man who fought for one of the militant Muslim states trying to push Israel off the face of the earth was at this meeting with these Brooklyn liberals, this cabal of leftist Brooklynites that created the Huffington Post and helped place Barack Obama in power. Now you say, what does that have to do with Michael Savage? Anything, everything and nothing. They were 8,000 miles and 5 years away from the decision that banned Michael Savage from going to England. And yet this Hollywood cabal, as typified by Larry David, wants to move America toward exactly the kind of nanny state and banny state that England has become. And to a large degree, they are succeeding. You see, England has a socialized medicine, medical system. We now have socialized medicine. England has a Marxist regulatory regime, which restricts business. We have a bigger one emerging by the day under Barack Hussein, Zelig Obama. England has banned free speech by keeping Michael Savage out and banning anyone who does not adhere to the party line. And this Hollywood mafia does exactly the same thing through their blacklisting of anyone conservative who does not work in this town. So here we have it. England reaffirms ban on radio host Michael Savage, writes Jonathan Turley. Who is Jonathan Turley? Liberal constitutional professor. And he says this, I'll summarize it. While I strongly disagree with many of Savage's statements, I view the ban as part of a disturbing trend limiting free speech in the West and particularly in England, he writes. The very notion of ideas being a threat to public safety is the hallmark of censorship and governmental bias. The most recent letter is equally disturbing, he writes. It puts the burden on Savage to show that his ideas are not a threat to public security. A ridiculous burden, when the only way to do so appears to be the repudiation of his beliefs and ideas. England has moved rapidly against free speech guarantees with comparably little protest. There does not even to be much of a national debate despite the fundamental shift on individual rights. He writes, we need to support those civil libertarians in England who are fighting this lonely battle, often on behalf of unpopular individuals like Savage. See, now that's a true liberal, as opposed to the fascists who call themselves progressives. The fascists in America who call themselves progressives, the sneering Brooklynites who are at the core of it all, those who would ban your speech, those who would commit you to a mental hospital if they had the power, those who would put you in a re-education camp if they and do they have the power. Trust me, I know who they are. Everything they fear, they have become.
Savage.
Well, notwithstanding the Home Secretary's answer, she will be aware that the things of which she accuses Mike Savage is equally illegal in the United States of America, and he has not faced prosecution there. So does she realise how ludicrous her ban is? Does she realise the disrepute she has put this country in the eyes of many right-seeing people and indeed left-seeing people in the United States of America? And does she equally plan to ban Howard Stern, Rush Limbaugh, and other middle-aged, white, ordinary American radio presenters?
That was in May of 2009 from a British parliamentarian named Michael Fabricant. It was really well done. Amazing. Now, listen to clip 10. This was back from the same period when the British Parliament was still able to speak before the fake conservative took power. Listen to clip 10.
Can I ask my right honourable friend this question? If Savage had said what he did say about Muslims, if he had said it about Christians or Jews, what would be the reaction?
Mm-hmm. But I didn't say it about Christians or Jews, did I? Because so far as I know, Christians or Jews are not screaming in the streets that they're going to impose Sharia law or that they're going to kill anybody who opposes their conversion to their religion. You see, that's why it was said specifically about Muslims. Anyway, I don't want to, you know, go on and on and indulge myself with this, but I think I will for a little bit longer because there was a fabulous interview with the BBC for those of you liberals who only listen to FM. I met many of you in my life. We don't listen to AM. We only listen to FM. And of course, it's the Holy Grail FM, as you well know. And we read The New Yorker. So why don't we listen to the BBC interview with a very literate liberal interviewer in June of 2009.
Is there anything that you have said or any of your views that you think might provoke people into violence?
Let me clear the record on that. Jackie Smith's homepage on the Home Secretary's page states that my words have led to violence, which is a total fabrication. None of my words have ever led to violence for the simple reason that I don't call for violence. I don't provoke violence. And moreover, I want to say that provoking violence is illegal in the United States as well. How in the world can she allege that my words have caused violence while I'm still on the air all these 15 years?
What she said was that some of your views are so extreme and you express them in such a way that it could cause inter-community tension here in the UK or even
I am so glad that she said that, because I want to quote my favorite British citizen, Winston Churchill, who warned in 1945 about socialism. May I tell you what he said?
Yeah.
He said, "No socialist government conducting the entire life could afford to allow free, sharp, or violently worded expressions of public discontent. They would have to fall back upon some form of Gestapo, no doubt very humanely directed in the first instance, and it would stop criticism, and it would gather all the power in the hands of the civil servants, who would no longer be servants and no longer be civil."
And what point are you making by quoting him?
Well, look at the first part of that sentence, which is that no socialist government will allow free, sharp, or violently worded expressions of public discontent. That's the statement I'm making.
In what way has your life been put in danger?
Well, shall I say Salman Rushdie? You know, people are quite fanatic on this earth outside of the radio business. We only talk. There are others who actually go out and kill for their distorted belief system. So I'd like to leave it at that.
But I just want to be clear, though. You're saying because of the way some of the things that you have said have been used since it was announced you're on this banned list, as a result of that, you have received death threats?
Yeah, well, I live with them for many, many years, but this has amplified it. The worst of them was the Muslim comment as presented by Jackie Smith. That was the worst of them. The others are controversial. This one has put me in grave danger, and I hope that the Muslim listeners will understand that I'm actually a friend of all organized religion. We are talking about the small percentage of fanatics in the world. We're not talking about the religion itself.
Savage. See, she gave me an opportunity on the BBC to express my point of view. That's a little different than the British government itself. This is the Savage Nation. What would you like to talk about? The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. What else is in the news? Do you want me to talk about the bald-headed psychotic Loeffner removed from courtroom and who has been found incompetent to stand trial even though everyone who was there saw him kill a number of people? And while we're talking about Loeffner, can you tell me why Major Nidal Hassan has still not been brought to trial? Major Nidal Hassan, the Muslim major who committed the Fort Hood massacre, is being hidden by the U.S. government and the U.S. Army, who refuse to bring him to trial for fear that the people will see things as they really are. Can anyone explain why he hasn't been brought to trial better than I have just done so? No, you cannot. 1-800-449. TSA pats down child, little old lady, ignores man in Arab garb. What did I tell you was going to happen in this country? You have faith in the TSA working for Big Sis? I may wake up tomorrow and find out that my dog has been indicted, that they may want to interrogate my poodle and see if he can give the dope on what I really say behind the scenes. For all I know, Big Sis is liable to send a dog investigator to my house and seize Teddy and say, "Teddy, we understand you're a member of the DU, or is it the PU, the Poodle Union? We want to bring you in for some questioning, just routine. Don't be frightened, Teddy. We're going to have a special canine interrogation unit asking you what really goes on in the Savage household. Don't worry, though. We have special techniques. We're going to put you on a special dog kibble. We'll get the truth out of you yet, Teddy. Come with us. Come this way to the new DHS," says Big Sis in the imaginary cartoon of my mind. New York City, WOR. Daniel, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Yeah, Mike, I'd like to know what I could do and what's happened over in England, because this has disturbed me for quite some time since it's been going on. And I'm an American.
It's very simple. Go to michaelsavage.com. On the middle right, there's a petition you can sign. If you've not signed it, sign it. Because I'm meeting with, I have a telephone conference tomorrow with a major U.S. senator, very high up the food chain, who is going to try to organize the U.S. Senate to intervene on my behalf the way they did for Ramos and Campion. Do you remember the Border Patrol agents who were falsely accused of killing an illegal, shooting an illegal alien who was smuggling drugs. Remember what happened to them under the great George Bush? Ramos and Campion were put in jail. Remember that?
Incarcerated, yes.
Okay. Put in jail for over, I don't know how long they served. People were screaming, get Ramos and Campion out. They were only doing their job. And Bush did nothing. He looked the other way. It took 105 or so members of Congress in a petition drive to get them out of jail. It just shows you what we have for leaders today in the Western nations, which is why we're crumbling and why we're no longer really a force in the world of ideas. We may have the most powerful military on earth, but in terms of a powerful force of ideas, it's not coming from America. The most powerful force of ideas on the planet is coming from Islam right now. You can write that down. They're vociferous in pushing their ideas and their thinking, if you want to put it that way, on the world. We are pushing nothing on the world. All we're doing is reacting, and by the way, in a very tepid manner. Wisconsin, Michael, you're on the Savage Nation.
Michael, I am with you 100%. I am 59 years old. I am from Chicago. I was born and raised in Chicago. Why aren't we demonstrating? Why aren't we going against this? What they did to you in England was wrong. I say what I want to say. Nobody likes it. That's too bad. I don't lie. The truth shall prevail, and you tell the truth. You're a very intelligent man. I would love to come on your talk show because I have a lot of secrets that I've been hiding for many, many years about this government and the things that are going on in it, and it stinks.
Are you a former member of a government?
No, I was serving the Marine Corps during Vietnam, and we did. I helped build President Johnson's limousine down in Chicago. And my initials are on the bottom of the limousine on armored plating. We did the two Secret Service cars.
Oh, and so you were really down. You were down on the. You know something about LBJ's armored car. I don't want to. I don't want to pry about that. Well, look, I appreciate your heartfelt call, and I know that there are thousands of you out there, if not more, who, if I said, look, we're going to rally in Chicago or we're going to rally in New York or San Francisco or wherever on a such and such a date, I want you to be there for me. We could probably get 50,000 people to a stadium, and the day may come, but the day has not yet come. And I thank you very much for offering. Please understand that I am a talk show host. I am not a revolutionary, nor am I running for office. However, I think this issue goes way beyond the single man. And if they'll do this to me today, they'll do it to you tomorrow. Moreover, it's going to bite a liberal in the behind as sure as I'm sitting here. Very shortly, this will bite a liberal in behind very, very shortly. All those fraudulent liberals who shoot their mouths off about freedom of speech, this, artistic, that, when they just want to push pornography and filth down your throat, or they want to bash Christians and white people, which Larry David does for a living. Every other show he did was about bashing Christians and bashing Christians. That's all he did in Brooklyn, where there's a degree of racism that you could never believe. But to think that a man from this small village of Brooklyn and his cohorts have risen so high in America and yet have such a, I'm looking for the right word, have such a malcontent towards this country is incomprehensible. They've become richer than a king. More famous than you could ever imagine. And all they were street bums. Most of them never went to college. Just smart aleck guys who were no better than car hops or bus boys. But because they had a certain degree of talent, a certain degree of humor, and they went in with the Hollywood mafia, and they knew how to kiss certain behinds, here they are at the top of the world. And what do they espouse? They hate Christianity, they hate Christians, and they hate America. And these people were the types who flunked science or never took it. They're the most fanatic believers in the false religion of global warming. They're fools, don't you understand it? But they're dangerous fools. Now, what does that have to do with me? Everything and nothing. As I said earlier, they have everything and nothing to do with my situation. Except I'll ask you good liberals one question. How is it that not one liberal that I know of has come to my defense? How is it that all of you liars who speak so highly about the First Amendment, who worked overtime to make sure that Larry Flynn could put filthy, dirty, disgusting, anti-female pornography in every household. How come you degenerates have nothing to say when it's real free speech? Where are you now that I need you, all you fraudulent lawyers who charge me $400 an hour to defend me against slander and libel? Where are all you First Amendment frauds from New York City with law degrees who are on medication day and night and scream about the First Amendment that you're an expert on the First Amendment? I haven't heard from any of you. What's the matter? You didn't get cash on the barrelhead? Don't you understand that all your talk about the First Amendment came from pornographers and the front for the pornography mavens of America? That's all it was about. When it comes down to real freedom of speech, real ideas that have no pornography attached to them, none of the wise guys from Brooklyn, none of the wise guys, none of the bellhops from the Catskill Mountains who got lucky have said one word about this issue. Not one of these bellhops from Brooklyn has said one word. All they do is espouse anti-Christian and anti-American rhetoric behind the scenes. You want to know what they say behind the scenes? Don't get me started. I grew up with these bellhops. I know what they think of America, and I know what they think of Christianity. It makes me sick to tell it to you. Seattle, Jake, you're on the Savage Nation. Glad to hear from you in Seattle, Washington.
Mr. Savage, I'm a liberal arts major at the University of Washington, and today we had a discussion regarding conservatives and liberalism, and you came up in the conversation, and the professor brought you up as a narrow-minded bigot. Being a huge fan of the show, I stood up for you. I said, it's not true. He's a brilliant man.
Well, he's just jealous because all he has is a group of students he can threaten with grades. He has no one who's ever heard of him. Was the topic was what, about free speech?
Yes, sir. It was under the separation of church and state.
Oh, I see. In other words, he was trying to bash religion and make sure that Christianity once again was banned from the classroom and from the public sphere. You got to understand that that's all they're after here, is to ban the Bible. That's all they want to do.
Absolutely correct.
You understand where they're coming from, don't you? That basically they want to push pornography and degeneracy down your throat, and they want to make sure that real Christians are not heard from.
Absolutely correct. You're okay to be free if you're a homosexual. You can push your agenda.
Well, let's not go into a... I don't want to go down that road. I'm just telling you, I know where they're coming from. I pay no attention to Martinet professors. That's all I can tell you. 1-800-449-8255. What else do you want to talk about? New York, WOR. Mike, welcome to the program.
Hi. You are so Mike. Right when you say it can happen to anybody. This whole internet thing just scares the living crap out of me. Clicking on whatever you click on, you like this program or that program. Who's watching?
So you're afraid that the internet's being monitored by Big Sis?
Absolutely.
Well, what else do they have to do in between watching child pornography? What else do you think they're going to do with your money?
Yeah.
All right, thanks for the call. Yeah, I have no faith in my government, do you? I fear my government, do you? Do you trust the Obama government? I don't. Do you fear the Obama government is spying on you? I do. Do you suspect the Obama government would like to make certain that you never open your mouth with anything that's negative about the grandson of the Kenyan cook, the Irish barrister, or whatever he is today. We don't know what he is. 2 days ago, he was a son of Ireland, and now he's a Kenyan cook's grandson. He's a man for all seasons, I suppose. In that sense, he's a true American. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Puzzled that our democracy is so fragile that we can't survive.
You've forgotten something. You have forgotten that at this particular moment there's something going on called an investigation into MPs' expenses, haven't you? You've forgotten all about that.
I haven't forgotten that.
You've forgotten all about that, and then suddenly this pops up and, we'll ban him.
What was it? Voltaire? I always forget. I may disagree with you, but I'll defend your right to say it.
Yes, that's correct.
Paraphrase him.
Well done. It was Voltaire.
Voltaire. Yeah. Wasn't that what my philosophy professor would be proud of me? Wasn't that what our democracy is based on?
Well, not really, is it? Because we have so many rules and regulations about what we can say, when we can say it, how we can say it, that we're so wound up with political correctness and fairness that what we actually do is, if anybody is likely, I'm amazed you're still on anyway, if anybody says anything that might actually upset
cruising
someone,
cruising here, isn't it?
someone, then they can't, because you might upset somebody.
So, yeah, we've gone from Voltaire to a new form of Stalinism, and the bellhops from the Catskill Mountains who push pornography and the degeneracy, like Larry David, in my opinion, and the others are actually at the forefront of this movement away from freedom of speech while pretending to be oh so free and wild. Doesn't mean they're not talented. It doesn't mean that they don't make me laugh. They do. But underneath the laughter, there are very serious people. Very serious people. They put Obama in power. Do you understand what I'm saying to you? David Geffen, Brian Grazer, Aaron Sorkin, Norman Lear, Larry David, his wife Lori David, were at the core of people who put Obama in the White House. Do you understand where they're coming from? Do you understand what I'm trying to say to you? Do you understand that this list of Hollywood bellhops, Hollywood bellhops, largely uneducated, largely self-taught, full of themselves, science illiterates. They are adherents to the false religion of global warming. Everything that you consider to be irrational, they embrace. They have a almost a psychotic, I'm looking for the distemper. They have an almost psychotic distemper for Christianity. It's amazing how they would embrace Obama despite what he has become. We saw through Obama from the beginning, but they fell in love with him. They were embracing their own prejudices. Don't you understand? They were so embarrassed by their own racism that they felt to overcompensate for it by embracing Obama. They could prove beyond a reasonable doubt how pure they really were. Bellhops from the Catskills who push porno and degeneracy. Never forget it.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Possible for the sons and daughters of former colonies to sit here as members of this great parliament, and for the grandson of a Kenyan who served as a cook in the British Army to stand before you as President of the United States. Yeah, today's a day we speak with pride of being Irish American, whether we actually are or not. I am pleased to say that I can actually get away with it. It's possible for the sons and daughters of former colonies to sit here as members of this great parliament, and for the grandson of a Kenyan who served as a cook in the British Army to stand before you as President of the United States.
I'm a Yankee Doodle Dandy. Yankee Doodle do all
die. All right, so he's a man for all seasons. Here's a newspaper roundup for Wednesday, May 26, 2011. USA Today, the least read newspaper in the world. A newspaper that's never made a dime. Here's their headline. Americans say no to electric cars despite high gas prices. Never anything controversial in USA Today. USA Today, Obama administration buying 101 Chevrolet Volts despite high cost. Fox News, White House creates new position dedicated to damage control in the media, meaning anyone who says anything negative about the imposter will be talked to by Homeland Security. Politico, Obama miscues on royal toast, speaks over British national anthem. Have you seen that one? I mean, this is something that you got to look at. He embarrassed himself in the United States of America. You got to take a look at the video. It's on michaelsavage.com, in the sense that here we have a Midwest deluged by in biblical proportions with a tornadoes and floods, and we have a president toasting the Queen of England. I want to ask you something. What if during Katrina, George Bush was abroad and refused to come home? Do you think Jesse Jackson, do you think the illegitimate media would have had something to say to George Bush? Do you think they would have all been braying together rather than praying together? As you well know, liberals don't pray together. They bray together. Conservatives pray together, but liberals bray together. And the liberals would have brayed. The president's ignoring America. Why is he over there in Italy with his buddy Berlusconi? Do we have Obama miscuing on the royal toast? That's all they eat in England is toast anyway. Do we have that one? Play that one for the audience if they haven't seen it. You have
Ladies
to see Obama's ears.
Please stand with me and raise your glasses as I propose a toast. To Her Majesty the Queen, to the vitality of the special relationship between our peoples, and, in the words of Shakespeare, to this blessed plot, this earth, this realm, this England, to the Queen.
They cut him off. He stood there alone. Nobody, they were just stiff-lipped and rigid, given that they're uptight in England to begin with, because he was supposed to stop talking, but apparently without a teleprompter, there was nothing to tell him to stop talking. And given that he needs an audience to listen to him, and when he ever has an audience, like the folks from Brooklyn, he can't stop talking. Consequently, he kept talking, and the Queen was humiliated by his gaffe. You want to hear a real leader? I'm going to play something for you that you should never forget. These are some of the. This is a very short soundbite that I played yesterday. It's very, very short. It's one of the greatest statements ever stated on freedom of speech and socialism. Listen to the greatness of Winston Churchill.
No socialist system can be established without a political police. Many of those who are advocating socialism or voting socialist today will be horrified at this idea. That is because they are short-sighted. That is because they do not see where their theories are leading them. No socialist government conducting the entire life and industry of the country could afford to allow free, sharp, or violently worded expressions of public discontent. They would have to fall back on some form of Gestapo.
Free, sharp, violent discussions of discontent or something to that effect. You understand what he's talking about. We don't need the First Amendment to protect polite speech. It doesn't need protection. In China, they don't have a First Amendment because no one dares have any free, sharp, violent speech. If they do, their kidneys are removed. First, they're removed, and then their kidneys are removed, and they're never heard from again. The mark of a democracy is a place where there's disagreement in the political marketplace, where there's free, sharp, violent disagreement. That's what freedom of speech is, and that's what the First Amendment was written for. Not to protect your politeness in a supermarket. You don't need your politeness in a church pew. This is what you need it for. 1-800-449-8255. Here's the rest of the headlines. From Philadelphia, New Jersey school district might ban weekend homework. I guess the children need to spend their weekends seeing if they can score better drugs. The Hill, Dems to press for end to Afghan war during defense debate. Politico, Senate's Dems say Ryan's Medicare plan hurts women, blah, blah, blah. Senate Democrats may join rebuff of Obama on the Israeli border issue. Fox News report John Edwards faces indictment for campaign violations, tried to hide his extramarital affair. I was on to John Edwards from day one. I knew the guy was a fraud because I studied him as a trial lawyer. I knew that the man was a renegade, the lowest of the low in the legal profession. I mean, there are decent lawyers, obviously. This guy, this tort lawyer, John Edwards, don't you remember what I used to say about him in the beginning? I was alone in criticizing him for what he had done to doctors and hospitals in the Southeast. He had taken congenital diseases and convinced toothless descendants of moonshiners that he stacked in the juries He went around the hills of the Ozarks, and whoever he could find with an IQ lower than the norm, which was at about approximately 60 to 70 after fish oils, he stalked in the jury, and he convinced them that congenital diseases were caused by malpractice and bad hospital practices, and he destroyed hospitals. He made hundreds of millions of dollars. I despised him from day one. It was all given away with one mole on his face, and I saw it first. Well, now the truth has come out. He never conned me any more than the Durham dirtbag conned me. Didn't con me any more than the Rocky Mountain white trash who falsely accused Kobe Bryant conned me. So I kind of see things for what they are. Next one. Let's see. What else is in the news? USA Today. New York City is number one in U.S. for bed bug infestations. God. Fox News. Maria Shriver leaked husband's love child to newspaper. Has hired private eye. Los Angeles Times. Santa Monica group aims to outlaw male circumcision. I wonder if Larry David's part of that group. He's near Santa Monica, isn't he? Would he join that group too? Because, I mean, that's very au courant. Banning circumcision is very au courant. I suspect that way they can get even with all of the old rabbis. Washington Times. Congress raves over Israeli Prime Minister. Netanyahu set to make compromises. What compromises can he make? Don't call me about Israel. Leave me out of it, would you please? I don't want to talk about Israel. I'm sick of it, okay? I am tired of it. I don't want to talk about it anymore. Israel has plenty of influence in the U.S. They have plenty of representation. So let's stop already with the Israel talk. Okay, the day somebody from Israel comes to my defense, the day one Jewish professional organization comes to my defense is the day I'll start talking about Israel again. I wrote to every major league group in the United States of America and got nothing back. Rabbi Haya of the Simon Wiesenthal Center, no answer. Abe Foxman of the Anti-Defamation League, Oy Gewalt, no answer. Yeah, don't talk to me about professional religionists who wrap themselves in a religion for personal gain. Natalie in Virginia, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Mr. Savage, how are you doing? At the top of the program, you mentioned being at the age of 18, you started analyzing your dreams, your subconscious, and your idol thoughts. Well, I'm 18, and I find myself in the same, and I was wondering, what was the first step you took to put your millions of thoughts?
Sorry, hold it. You analyze your dreams, and what? I can hardly hear the rest of it. What?
And your idol thoughts. And I'm 18, and I'm doing the same, and I was wondering, what was the first step you took to put your millions of thoughts into action to, like, one day speak words so powerful they're being banned in other countries?
That's very interesting the way you put it. In other words, how did I marshal my thoughts to reach such a point of prominence that my thoughts are such a threat to an entire nation that they wouldn't permit me to enter the country? That's very interesting the way you put it. What you're saying is it's a badge of honor. This is, you got to understand, what I have been is blacklisted. Everything the liberals talk about from the 1950s, McCarthyism, like it's still real to them. They're living like a king of England, like a king. They own airplanes, yachts, unlimited money, but they're all marching around like they personally lost a relative in the Triangle Shirtwaist Fire and that they were banned by Senator McCarthy, Congressman McCarthy. It's fraudulent. I'm the one who's blacklisted right now. I don't give a damn about communists in the 1950s who should have been banned, by the way. That wasn't freedom of speech. They espoused the overthrow of the United States of America, and they plotted the overthrow of America. And every day you hear them, the boys from the shtetl of Brooklyn, talking about the 50s and the blacklist. I'm now the one who is blacklisted, and they're talking about people they don't even know. Why? It's all a shuck and a jive. So that's the end of the story. What do you want to talk about? Let's talk about anything except my dreams. Houston, Texas. Eugene, you're on the Savage Nation. Thanks for calling from Texas. What's on your mind?
Hey, you know how you like authors and everything? Well, John Steinbeck in East of Eden wrote about the death of creativity and how an individual is what creates everything. And everything is being standardized. They're trying to standardize you. They're trying to fit everybody into packages. Governments all over. Socialism. It's
right. In order to have a smooth new world order, What they have to do is stamp out individualism, individual religions, borders, individual languages, and individual cultures. They want one homogenous communist world where everyone wears the same suit and speaks the same language. Even if it's in different languages, they speak in the same tones and in the same basic formations of words. That's what's coming in this world unless we all become who we really are. God bless the individual. I'll be right back.
British Home Secretary Jackie Smith saying that you're on this list that we've been talking about because you are someone who, quote, has fallen into the category of fomenting hatred of such extreme views and expressing them in such a way that's actually likely to cause inter-community tension or even violence if that person were allowed in the country. What's your response to that?
It is demented. That's a demented attitude. We are protected by the First Amendment, number one. They are not. And the First Amendment, as we all know, was written to protect offensive speech, not polite speech. Let's begin with the basics. But more than that, she lumped me in with known murderers and terrorists. People have been in prison for killing people. I am a talk show host and an author. The fact of the matter is I've been on the air for 15 years, 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. I have never, ever promoted violence. There has never been one violent incident attached to my show.
As you said, you're being grouped in with people including anti-gay preachers, radical Muslim clerics, the Ku Klux Klan. Of all the talk radio hosts, why you?
I was astounded when I saw this. I thought it was some bizarre joke. I said, this can't be real. How in the world could she lump me in with people such as Russian skinheads who were imprisoned for killing people? It makes no sense.
Why waste your time? You know, you have a lot of things to do. You say you're probably not interested in even traveling to the UK. So why waste your time fighting this in court?
I'm not wasting my time. I've spent my entire life building up a great reputation amongst millions of loyal followers and fans. I have a family, and when I leave the earth, I want to leave my name in good standing, in the way it really is. My PhD is from Berkeley. I did great research. I've written great books. I'm a family man. I love my country. And I want to clear my name. I want my name off that list, and I want a letter of apology from this Jackie Smith.
And since this came to light, have you heard anything from the British government about whether they're rethinking this?
I have not, but I've heard from British attorneys who are salivating to set the record straight and win quite a large settlement should she not remove my name from the list.
There's a lot of British people that have never heard of you before. They didn't know Michael Savage. They didn't know your radio show before this, that are now going to be logging on the Internet, clicking on, listening to you. So, I mean, this has got to help ratings in some way.
It's not about ratings. I'm at a point in my life where ratings don't matter to me one way or the other. I could leave radio tomorrow and I wouldn't have a different lifestyle than I do today. People have to understand that I believe in what I say. Borders, language, culture is the real message of the Savage Nation. Borders, language, culture. I'm a traditional American. I'm a patriotic American. And if that's a crime in England, God help us all.
Why don't you clear up some of the misconceptions? I want to ask you about your views about immigrants and illegal immigration.
Illegal immigration? It's in keeping with 80% of the American people. They want it stopped, and they want it stopped now. This country is sinking in red ink. This country is broke. This country cannot afford the welfare. This country cannot afford the legal care. This country cannot afford the education of illegal immigrants. We can no longer live in the 1950s. Moreover, there's a big difference between immigration and illegal immigration. I am the son of an immigrant. I'm a first-generation American. My grandfather waited online to become a citizen. You can't suddenly take people who run across the border and say, presto, you're a citizen, can you?
Savage. Now, that was in May of 2009 when I answered someone on CNN about illegal immigration. You notice what I said? We are sinking in red ink. We can't afford the welfare, legal care, education of illegal aliens. That's what I said back in 2009. Is anyone listening to the show who would disagree with me? We're not sinking in red ink. We can't afford the welfare. We can't afford the legal care. We can't afford to educate illegal aliens. Now, if you're bored with all of this, I can just go to the news. Here's one. New Zealand truck driver Stephen McCormick nearly pops after getting air hose lodged in buttocks. Maybe that's something that would appeal to the listeners. After all, you're the average American. You're not interested in politics or in things so highfalutin as the First Amendment. Let's talk about a truck driver who got an air hose stuck between his legs.
Savage.
Our nations are not and will never be at war with Islam. Our fight is focused on defeating Al-Qaeda and its extremist allies. In that effort, we will not relent, as Osama bin Laden and his followers have learned. And as we fight an enemy that respects no law of war, we will continue to hold ourselves to a higher standard.
Yeah, right.
By living up to the values.
Yeah, like cluster bombing the Libyan army.
And due process. Right,
I don't want to hear the rule of law, the rule of law, the rule of law, the rule of law. So long as the law is on your side, you believe in the rule of law. Your own liberals are abandoning you because you don't respect the rule of law, Mr. Obama. They know that you're cutting every corner you can and using every trick in the book to bypass the law. As the British essayist Johnson wrote in the 18th century, the law is an ass. And that's not a dirty word, by the way. The law is an ass, wrote one of the great British essayists. Yes, it certainly is. It can be used any way you want it to be used. John in Chicago, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, you know, I get sick of listening to that, too. And I got to say, you're a great American. And, Michael, I think you need to go down to the lab and have yourself cloned many times over.
Well, you mean from the boys from Brazil to the boys from the Bronx, huh?
Well, you know, Michael, you have a wealth of wisdom, and you got a lot of teaching to do. You got a lot of people out there that need it.
John, let me explain something. The writing of books is a form of cloning of my mind. Think about what I just said. It's very interesting. Nobody's ever said that, so far as I know. I don't need to be cloned. Once was enough for me. I wouldn't wish my life upon anybody else. I can't complain about it, but I can't say that it's a life of peace and harmony. It's an agonizing life in many ways, but I'm used to it. I've girded myself to this kind of a life. But what I'm saying is my writings, my books will live. They're not written for yesterday to be thrown away. They're not just a picture of me with empty pages. You know, my books sell a few hundred thousand in hardcover, which unto itself is a big achievement. My books, do you know my first book is still in print? I wrote a book in 1972 called Earth Medicine, Earth Foods. It is still in print. People still buy my books. The books I wrote about natural healing and natural health and vitamins and herbs, they're still in print 20, 30 years later. And I believe that my political books are going to live as well. So I'm not looking for that kind of posterity. I don't go into the clone thing. I'm not into cloning. The only thing I want cloned is my dog, Teddy. I think since he can't write books, he should be cloned. Tucson, James, you are on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Yes, sir. I wanted to get your perspective on something. I've always had a great affinity for the intestinal fortitude of the Jewish peoples, especially considering their rough history. But one thing I've never been able to understand is why the Jewish population of the U.S. predominantly votes Democrat when they know they're going to forsake the Israel and the Jewish people here in the States.
It's so well put. Your statement has a completeness to it that almost requires no answer. The only answer I can give you is that liberalism is a mental disorder. In other words, the only explanation for what you just asked is that people sometimes do things that make no sense. They vote almost like in rote. But the same is true for other people. But no, this is a special case because the Jewish people have an affinity for Israel, at least they should. And yet the Democrats, as you well know, have turned their back on Israel. So what you're asking is a very real question, especially in light of the fact that Obama just tried to push the Jewish state into oblivion. I understand that. I think you can better ask that question of your local Jewish organizations. Ask them why they're such lockstep liberal Democrats when the Liberal Democrat Party of America under Obama, which is really the far left wing of the Democrat Party, stands in opposition to the survival of the state of Israel. I don't have an answer for you. I don't have an answer. Liberalism is a mental disorder is the closest I can come. And then there's a lot of sheepishness and groupthink and group behavior. You know, Again, we're talking about Israel. All right, fine. We'll talk about Israel. I'm so bored of the Israel question. They have a very powerful military. They have a very powerful PR arm. They have a lot of members of Congress who are on their side. Why do I have to take a whole story now and talk about Israel? Okay? I mean, what do you want me to say that you haven't heard 1,000 times before? They're not going away so fast. Okay? Because a group of terrorists want them to cease existing isn't going to, and they're not going to disappear so quickly. That's all. Hawaii, thank you for calling, Bill. Welcome to the program. What's on your mind, Hawaii, Bill?
Hi, Dr. Savage, long-time listener. And I just want to ask you about your process of writing. Is it a couple pages a day, or do you do a whole bunch at once? Or, how do you
it's very interesting. It's very interesting. I find that when I'm on a bicycle sometimes in the morning, I get up, small breakfast, take a lot of vitamin C powder. If I take a bike ride, usually within about 5 minutes of the bike ride, a thought will pop into my head that will become a seed for an entire concept. And then I go back and I can dictate that thought, which can become part of a chapter, for example. But, writing is interesting. There are a lot of people who can write, but they have no ideas. Writing should be based upon ideas rather than just upon words. And I believe that my books have good ideas in them, which is why they've attracted an audience. But to answer your question specifically, I don't have a set schedule in that regard. I don't have that kind of discipline where I get up at 4 a.m. and write till 6. I think that's what you were asking, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
I think everybody has to find their own inspiration. And what kind of book are you interested in? Or what are you trying to write, an article or a book?
Well, I've written a novel, a bunch of short stories, and a couple of screenplays.
Oh. You just want to know what a fellow author does to motivate himself. Is that it?
Yeah, I mean, because I have a, basically come up with an idea is the toughest part. Having the idea is the rough part. And then you just got to hammer it out. Sometimes just a couple pages is all you can get out of yourself per day.
Yeah, but, don't you find in the writing world that there are many, many very skilled craftsmen who can write a good screenplay, but they have nothing original, no original ideas? I mean, that's what I find. If you look at movies, like there's a movie out now that I'm not going to go to. It's the one about Hangover Part 2. I like the first movie. But when I saw that an interview with the writers for that movie who said, Will, we smoke a lot of pot, and then we come up with the craziest ideas we can, such as a midget spits out a dog who spits out a joint, and we just keep smoking joints. I said, you know what? I'm never going to go to their movies. I don't need to listen to the deranged insanity of a stupid pothead in Hollywood. You follow what I'm saying? That's not my idea of creativity. You just come up with stupid ideas. And unfortunately, that's what passes for creativity today. The more bizarre, the more outlandish, the more pornographic, you mean it's creative? Only when you have a debased society that it's out of ideas can Hollywood survive. Those are not ideas. There's nothing ennobling about these movies. When I was a kid, I went to the movies. Not every movie was inspirational, but some were. I would see a movie about, for example, a war hero, To Hell and Back, about Audie Murphy. I come out of the movie loving America, for example. Or John Wayne. I come out loving justice and truth and the little guy standing up to the greatest odds. I came out inspired to fight for what I believed in. I can give you many examples. Movies about Madame Curie, a woman way ahead of her time, 100 years ahead of her time. She didn't need the EEOC and the women's movement and loudmouths like the people in the women's movement to help her get where she got. How'd she get there? Because she was a straight-out genius. Those were the movies that inspired me. But they were movies that had principle to them and meaning, and they were also entertaining. I'll tell you another one, Jim Thorpe, All American. I don't know if anyone ever remembers that. It was about an American Indian in a boys' home. But he was such a great athlete, how he overcame prejudice against Native Americans to become one of the great athletes of his time. Now you say, well, how could you relate to that being a kid from the Bronx? Because I relate to a lot of things. I always have. I wasn't one of these bellhops from Brooklyn who was limited in what I could see and what I could think. That's how the bellhops from Brooklyn wound up hating America so much. There's distemper toward Christianity in America is pathological, incidentally. Chicago, Mike, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, I'm an Orthodox Jew who lives in Chicago, and we have collective Stockholm Syndrome, and that's why we vote for Democrats, and that's why we always
sympathize with the people who are trying to kill us.
You know, I'm going to tell you a story, and I'm not going to give any names. I had a call this morning from a man who's involved deeply in anti-terrorism activities with various organizations who happens to be Jewish, and he has a conceal and carry permit. He also teaches weapons training. He told me that there was a couple of years ago, there was an interfaith conference at his local temple, and they invited the head of the front group for the Muslim Brotherhood to speak in the Jewish center. He knew who this person was. He sat there quietly and waited for the question and answer session. And he asked this front person for the Muslim Brotherhood, which, by the way, has a different umbrella, a name for the group. They have different groups in America, the Muslim Brotherhood, and they disguise themselves, and then they go to all these interfaith conferences with liberal Christians and liberal Jews. So when his turn came to ask questions, he asked a very pointed question of the person about Hamas. The rabbi grabbed the microphone out of his hand and said, "We don't want that tone in this synagogue." Can you believe what I'm just telling you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because
here they had a front person for Hamas, for the Muslim Brotherhood, rather, in a synagogue, who would literally kill everybody in the audience. And when a Jew who would stand up stood up, now, I'm giving a Woody Allen translation, "We ought to get along. Be nice. Be nice. What's wrong with you?" I'm giving a translation now to make a point. You get it?
Yeah, absolutely. We don't want to offend anybody that might want to, you know, that might give them an excuse to kill us. But we all suffer from Stockholm syndrome. It's very clear to me now.
Well, but you as an Orthodox Jew do not suffer from Stockholm syndrome. It's interesting to me that the Orthodox Jewish community is by and large super conservative, very, very right wing. And it's the liberal Jewish community that's extremely a socialist Democrat. Is that not a reasonable analysis?
Yeah, because they misunderstand the teachings in the Torah, the teachings that we're supposed to take care of one another. They say, like, we're supposed to, if somebody goes broke, you're supposed to give him tzedakah, which means righteousness. And you're supposed to put him back to where he was before he fell. But what they think is, it's not the people that are supposed to do it, it's the government that's supposed to do it. And
uh-huh.
They've interpreted things. And they've thrown, and it's all become, it's somebody else's fault.
It's always somebody else's fault. It's not the individual who went broke. I get it. Well, Mike, keep up the good fight. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Before this hour comes to an end, again, I want to thank the few friends that I have in the most important medium in the world, which is the web, and that would be Matt Drudge, Joseph Farah of WorldNet Daily, Chris Ruddy of Newsmax. They came when I needed them. They didn't leave me twist in the wind, and I want to thank them for it. I know most of you already thinking about the long Memorial Day weekend, as rightly you should. Living well is the best revenge. So if you'd rather I shift from the First Amendment, I can give you a recipe on how to poach fish in the dishwasher, if you prefer. Or we can just get wacky and talk about liberals using poupon mustard while conservatives squirt French's on their hot dogs. As you know, liberals over the weekend will probably barbecue tofu dogs, thinking that they're better, while conservatives will barbecue real beef hot dogs. I mean, you can laugh at it all you want. I was once myself under the impression that tofu was good for you. In fact, when the kids were young, I also barbecued tofu dogs, the most disgusting food ever made, and probably toxic. It's a chemical batch. I mean, at least with a beef hot dog, you know, it's from the slaughterhouse floor, while with tofu, you don't know whether it was made of a slaughterhouse door. So if you'd rather talk about Memorial Day weekend, we can do that. As again, how to poach fish in the dishwasher, how to meet the right man online, six ways to get a raise faster, things like that. Everyone's thinking about traveling this summer vacation. I overhear normal people talking about where they're going this summer, and a part of me has a nostalgic jealousy. It's not that I couldn't travel and go away sometime this summer. It's just that I don't travel and go away in the summer. I have nowhere I want to go. What am I going to go to France? And go to Italy. I mean, if I want to go to France, I go to San Francisco to a French restaurant, which I never do. A, I don't like French food, and B, I don't like French waiters. So let's put an X through that. If I want Italian food, I go to North Beach and I go to certain restaurants, mainly one. And you know the restaurant, I don't have to mention it. I go to the North Beach restaurant, and suddenly I'm in Italy. First of all, I speak in Italian. Secondly, the food is better than in Italy. The ingredients are fresher. And third, I know them and they know me, and I know that the fish is fresh. It wasn't doctored up to make it taste good. If I want Chinese food, I don't have to go to Beijing and risk getting a disease. I go to Chinatown and have the best Chinese food in the world. So I myself, doesn't mean you shouldn't travel. I'm not going to change your mind. I don't understand why anybody would want to travel. I remember when I was a young man and I was on a troop ship converted to a student ship. I told you the story over and over again. It was a great trip, by the way, 10 days across the Atlantic on the MV Waterman. I remember it to this day. It was an old troop carrier. And we're talking, what, mid-50s, I guess? God, that, no, 60s, sorry. And it was a dump. It was a real tub. I had a terrific time. I really did. And, you know, I met an older guy. He must have been 25. And he said to me, just remember, kid, being on the road is exhausting. As you get older, you'll find out, meaning older, when you hit 25, that the only reason to travel, he said, are funerals and weddings. I think he's right. therefore, I hope I won't be traveling in the near future. My family knows this, and it's sad in a way because they're different than me. They love travel. They're normal people. They're not in talk radio. They're not in the media. I mean, being in the media, how could you travel? I don't understand it, truthfully. The center of my universe right now is my home studios, my dog, my kitchen. As an old wise philosopher said to me when I was very young and broke and was very worried that I wasn't getting ahead in the world, and I went to him for advice. He was an old world guy, and he said, what are you worried about? I said, well, I'm not making a great living. I can't get ahead. I have young children. I don't know what the future is going to hold for me. And he said, what are you worried about? He said, what does a man really need? He said, the teachings tell us that what a man really needs is a desk, a lamp, a chair, and a toilet. In other words, he reduced it down to the basics. He wasn't really too far from the truth. When you actually analyze what you really need, especially if you have an active mind, do you really need to go to meetings unless you're selling something or you want a network? No. Truthfully, in the age of the internet, there's no reason to go anywhere. It's sad to say, it's true. And it can get very, very addictive and suck you right in. But I myself, while resisting it for so many years, I live on the internet. I'm on it from 5 o'clock in the morning till midnight. I'm sorry to tell you, I am. I live in the cyber world, but the cyber world is really the world that we inhabit. We can learn so much, and we know what's going on in the world. Is it everything? No. I mean, no, it's not everything. Of course not. But I really feel bad for people who are not on the net every morning looking at what's going on in the real news. They don't go on to the Drudge Report. They read the local paper. They don't go on to WorldNet Daily. They read the local paper. They don't even know what's going on in their world. Here in San Francisco, we have a sad old newspaper that used to be a medium-grade, decent B paper. It's fallen completely into disrepute. No one takes it seriously. If people live upon the San Francisco Chronicle or their website, they don't even know what just happened to Michael Savage, even though they espouse liberalism and walk around with their heads held high thinking that they are the tip of the spear of liberation and freedom. They have no idea what's going on outside their little bubble of San Francisco. And I feel not pity for them. I actually feel contempt for them, to be honest with you, because of their pomposity and their absurdity. But I don't live in that bubble. I don't live in that bubble. I live in the world of what's really going on in the world. How do you explain that most politicians, most thinking people, read these websites I mention to you every day as a matter of habit because they wouldn't know what's going on without it? That is their community. That these sites that I just mentioned to you are their community bulletins. Did you know that? It's like the world has so shrunk that this is one giant condominium. And these websites that I mentioned to you that came to my defense by publishing that article about me today and my plight, that's the community bulletin board. And I thank you for listening to the Savage Nation.
Savage. Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content,
psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
The big news for me today, you know what it is. It's being banned in Britain all over again. And the shock this time was not that I'm banned in Britain, but that it's the so-called conservative government under Cameron that has dug their heels in. And I've written a little monologue called From Nanny State to Banny State in One Generation, Banny. And in putting together today's show, I ran across an article about Arianna Huffington and her left-wing website. The article talked about how the site was created as a desire to counter Drudge and a result of a meeting that took place in her Brentwood mansion in 2004. I was stunned by the list of individuals who attended that meeting because it was basically a list of the left-wing Hollywood mafia. This group met in order to put Obama in power, long before the election. And who was on that list? Who's in the left-wing cabal? David Geffen, movie producer Brian Grazer, so-called screenwriter Aaron Sorkin, Norman Lear, Meg Ryan, and of course the inimitable self-hater Larry David and his ex-environmentalist wife, Lori David. This list of the Hollywood Mafia met at Huffington's mansion together with Peter Dayu, a Democrat political consultant who is... Peter Dayu, you would ask? Well, he's a former member of the Lebanese army turned far-left political consultant. That's right. A man who fought for one of the militant Muslim states trying to push Israel off the face of the earth was at the heart of the leftist Hollywood cabal that created the Huffington Post and helped place Barack Hussein Obama in power. You talk about suicidal missions for the Hollywood left, huh? Now, what does a room full of leftists in 2004 have to do with Michael Savage being banned in Britain years later? Everything and nothing. They were 8,000 miles and 5 years away from the decision that banned me from going to England. And yet the Hollywood Mafia, as typified by Larry David, wants to move America exactly in the direction of the nanny state that England has become. And to a large degree, they are succeeding. England has socialized medicine. We now have socialized medicine. England has a Marxist regulatory regime which restricts business, and now we have one as well. England has banned free speech by keeping Michael Savage out and banning anyone who says anything the government doesn't approve of. And now this Hollywood mafia would like to do the same thing here in the United States of America, where only their big mouths would be able to clap. It is a bizarre and interesting point of fact that the racist British National Party is blinded by their hatred of Jews to the real dangers of Islamofascism in England. But at the same time, Larry David, whose hatred of Christians oozes out of him every second he is on HBO, is blind to the same danger in the United States. England was long ago called a nanny state, but now with the banning of Michael Savage and free speech, they've become a banny state. The Hollywood Mafia and their radical Muslim allies would like to see the United States make the same transition from nanny state to banny state in one generation. Now, there's a number of people who have said some great things about this issue, not so much coming to my aid as coming to the aid of freedom itself. I have to begin this list with Matt Drudge, Joe Farah of World Net Daily, Matt Drudge, of course, of the famous Drudge Report, Joe Farah of World Net Daily, Chris Ruddy of Newsmax, and a few other people. Most interestingly, an article was written by a man I have never met who was a dyed-in-the-wool liberal professor who is often on television as a voice of calm liberal reason. I distinguish between liberalism and progressivism. His name is Jonathan Turley. Jonathan Turley is a constitutional professor. And here is what he wrote. England reaffirms ban on radio host Michael Savage. He says, we've been following the ban imposed on conservative radio host Michael Savage by England. Let me pause right there. He didn't say anything negative. He didn't use the slur words against me. England now appears to have reaffirmed the decision and accuses Savage of promising to retract some of his statements and failing to do so. While I strongly disagree with many of Savage's statements, I view the ban as part of a disturbing trend limiting free speech in the West and particularly in England. In the communication below, England's Treasury solicitor, Michael Atkins, tells counsel for Savage that he previously assured the government that Savage would repudiate some of his comments on his website. It also says that Savage promised to appeal the earlier decision and failed to do so. Savage was informed last July that the Cameron administration would continue the prior ban on his entry into the country unless he repudiated statements made in his broadcast that were considered a threat to public security. The very notion of ideas being a threat to public safety is the hallmark of censorship and governmental abuse. While then British Home Secretary Jackie Smith insisted that it is, quote, important that people understand the sorts of values and sorts of standards that we have here, close quote, she omitted free speech. The most recent letter is equally disturbing. It puts the burden on Savage to show that his ideas are not a threat to public security, a ridiculous burden when the only way to do so appears to be the repudiation of his beliefs and ideas. England has moved rapidly against free speech guarantees with comparably little protest. There does not even to be much of a national debate despite the fundamental shift on individual rights. We need to support those civil libertarians in England who are fighting this lonely battle, often on behalf of unpopular individuals like Savage. That is again from a constitutional scholar, Jonathan Turley. Now let me read you one of the letters written by one of the bloggers who read his column. Dr. Savage is being charged, tried and convicted and punished without a trial in the land that gave us the Magna Carta. It is a very bad Orwellian omen. Beware, liberals. Unless crushed, the same or worse fate will befall you in the future. Fight against this repression of free speech or insist the UK trial Savage prove even one incident of violence from his rhetoric. There is none. He does not deserve to be lumped in, as UK FOIA documents show, with terrorists and murderers ostensibly for balance. Protected speech is obnoxious to some, but needs to be allowed. Our U.S. government is remiss to allow this to stand against any U.S. citizen. England today has already lost civilization in many ways. There is no England anymore. Here's another letter. They ban him for his speech and yet allow Muslim radicals who spew hate into their country. You know where they can stick those pointy umbrellas. Well, here's another letter. The USA radio broadcast system would never allow Savage to stay on the air if he was a threat to the public. I guess the snobs in governmental England differ. This is a political statement, not a safety issue. Londonistan has tilted so far east that it sickens me to think England may be lost forever. What exactly was so foul for those of you to strongly disagree with Savage? Another one writes, Savage is a treasure. He is a true conservative and not a political Republican hack like Limbaugh and Hannity. Savage holds both Republican and Democrats' feet to the fire, and that is why no one on both sides will defend them. Shame on them all. He has never encouraged violence, yet all we see is pictures of Muslim protesters in England saying, death to those who insult Islam. And yet these people are allowed to remain in England. Bottom line is that there is no England anymore. The number one name for a boy in England is Muhammad. England of old is disappearing. And in its place will be a country like Libya and Syria, where people live in the 5th century. Here's another one. The British have lost their minds. Instead of banning Savage, the English people need to hear his message of borders, language, and culture before it is too late. But I guess they have become a country of Neville Chamberlains. Here's another one from Winston Churchill. Everyone is in favor of free speech. Hardly a day passes without its being extolled. But some people's idea of it is that they are free to say what they like. But if anyone else says anything back, that is an outrage. Winston Churchill. So Savage comments on the extremist Muslim threat and England bans him. Shame on you, England. Where have all the Churchills gone? So what else is on MichaelSavage.com? Obama makes fool of himself in front of the Queen. It really is a major league gaffe. But, you know, you want to talk about Obama. I want to ask you something. What do you think the phony liberals would be saying today if Katrina had occurred and Bush was traveling in England and Ireland and Europe and would not come back while the people were drowning? Do you know how many people have died in the Midwest as a result of the tornadoes and floods? And where is Obama? Toasting the Queen? You talk about tastelessness? Congress raves over Israeli Prime Minister. UK celebrates Obama's, but Michael Savage is another story. It's the best article about it. It's from WorldNet Daily. Not banned from Britain, convicted Muslim terrorist. Department of Justice okays prosecution of John Edwards. Will you please go to michaelsavage.com and sign my petition to get my name off the list? We're going to be meeting with the U.S. Senate in the near future and see if we can get this petition circulated. You can find it on the right side, middle. Emergency plea from Michael Savage. I am still banned in Britain. Please sign my petition now. Also on michaelsavage.com, Judgment Day forecaster sets new doomsday date. He changed it now. He said he meant it to be October 21st. Al Gore, the globing warmer, Al Gore. It turns out that he got a D in natural sciences in college. Utah woman accused of trying to sell daughter's virginity. The Savage's service dogs. You want to see our foster standard poodles in training to be service dogs for American disabled combat vets of the Afghan and Iraq conflicts? Take a look at them. They're at the bottom of my website. That's it. All this and more on today's radio show. Stay tuned right here on your local affiliate.
Savage.
Here's a good story for you who are germophobic. I'm a germaphobe. If anyone sneezes, I leave the room. I was in a house of worship 3 weeks ago. Everything was going well till a sneezer appeared 2 rows ahead of me. I left. That's all. God would have to understand, I figured. But it was not just a sneeze. I'm not talking about a dust sneeze. This was a mucosal sneeze that could have infected the entire house of worship. And the guy didn't do it once. He did it 5 times. That's it. Goodbye, Charlie. I was out of there. So I'm a germophobic in that regard because I say to people, I don't shake their hand. I do the ghetto thing with the fist. It's a smart thing. It's very Chinese. I like it. People try to shake my hand. Now I do the ghetto thing like a basketball with the fist. They laugh. I said, well, I do it because I don't have to touch your hand. I said, they're smart. The Chinese shook their own hand. They were even smarter yet. You went to shake it. Remember the ancient like pictures? They'd shake their own hand. They were, well, they need to touch your hand? What's handshakes about? So, anywho, I don't, if I'm in a room, a sneeze, a cough, once is okay. But if it's very fluid, there's a lot of fluid, I leave. I don't like, because I know it's spraying. Even from high school days, they showed, how come in my day, if they showed a sneeze, they showed it in slow motion, and how far a sneeze spread the germs? Like a like 12, 15 feet, right? You knew to avoid. My mother said, don't use a public water fountain. And there were other kids that stick their mouth fountain in Queens. They had like stone fountains and like water. And it was always like never a lot of enough water. It was always like within a quarter of an inch of the spout. There was always like a schmuck who'd put his mouth over the, he'd like suck on it. You'd think the guy was crazy. I wonder where those kids wound up. They have to have wound up working in government somewhere. I don't mean for Obama. Let's not get absurd. Like the MTA, something like that. So what I'm getting at is I've always been germophobic. And I read a story today that Norway has practically wiped out the superbug that was infecting the nation and has made Norway one of the most infection-free nations in the world. And take a guess what they did to wipe out the superbug in Norway. It's not that they took a drug. It's not that they ate certain foods. It's not that they exercised. It's not that they instituted Obamacare with another incompetent doctor telling you nothing and to go home and take an antibiotic. It's the opposite. Do you know what they did to eliminate the superbug? Do you know what they did to eliminate the contagious staph infection that had been killing tens of thousands of patients in the most sophisticated hospitals of Europe, North America, and Asia this year? Norwegians stopped taking antibiotics. In fact, it became a crime for a doctor to prescribe an antibiotic unless it was a medical necessity. Now, how many doctors in this country will have a patient come in with a sort of non-specific symptoms of a cough and they'll give you an antibiotic and the patient, you know, doesn't know any better and they take it. And I tell people, is it a viral infection or a bacterial infection you have? Duh, I don't know. I said, well, you may be making it worse with an antibiotic. And they looked at me like I don't know what I'm talking about. But now Norwegian doctors know what they're talking about. And they prescribe fewer antibiotics than any other country. So people do not have a chance to develop resistance to these antibiotics. And that comes down to the whole story. A doctor says there, if I treated someone with an infection in Spain with this penicillin, I would probably be thrown in jail. And rightly so, because it's useless there. It's a type of penicillin they use on a very specific type of infection. And they say Norwegians now are sanguine about their coughs and colds, toughing it out through low-grade infections. We don't throw antibiotics at every person with a fever. We tell them to hang on, wait and see, and we give them a Tylenol to feel better. Now, I don't use Tylenol. I don't use drugs like that because they're toxic. They're liver damaging, in my opinion. They're absolutely to be avoided, most of these drugs, incidentally, particularly if you have a hangover. Don't you dare use any of those over-the-counter medications. If you have to use anything, use an aspirin. Don't go near those other acetaminophens. You're just going to wind up with a liver transplant eventually. They're toxic to the liver. They're toxic to the kidneys. I've been saying this for 15 years. I've been writing about it for 15 years. I didn't do the original research, but I knew enough to study the original research and to publicize it. And so in Oslo, Norway, they have soothing but non-medicated lozenges, sprays, and tablets. All workers are paid on days they or their children stay home sick, and drug makers aren't allowed to advertise, reducing patient demands for prescription drugs. Now, compare that to America, where every other ad is for a medication, primarily for painkillers. Every other medication is a painkiller in America. Every normal quirk and slight this, they want you to drug it to death, and you wonder why there's such a line for a liver transplants in this country. Anyway, the bottom line is that the use of antibiotics became out of control in Norway, and the staph infections became rampant because of the use of the antibiotics. The staphylococcus became penicillin resistant. And now, because they've cut back on antibiotics for generic use, the people are getting better.
Savage.
You know, terrorism is much on our mind, and Eric Stackelback happens to be a correspondent about terrorism for CBN News. He's on the show today to tell us how Obama has abandoned Israel and why the 1967 borders really are indefensible. Eric, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, thanks so much. Always great to be here.
Tell the audience what going back to the 67 borders would actually mean for Israel.
Michael, I call these the Auschwitz borders, these pre-1967 borders. What they would do is they would give up the entire West Bank, or as some of us call it, supporters of Israel call it, Judea and Samaria, the biblical heartland. They would give up half of Jerusalem. Gaza's gone. And they would likely also, Michael, have to give up the Golan Heights back to Syria, which is a very strategic position. Now, if you've been to Israel, you see that if you go back to those pre-1967 borders, Israel, as Prime Minister Netanyahu so rightly pointed out, would be 9 miles wide in some places. 9 miles wide, that would be the width of the country. That's insane. And if you go to Judea, Samaria, the West Bank, it's mountainous, rugged terrain. If you had a Palestinian state there, you would have them, they'd have the ability to be on these mountaintops, to be on these hills, to aim rockets directly down at Israel, directly at Ben Gurion Airport, Israel's main airport. They could shut the country down. You'd have a situation where rockets could be raining down on Israel. I compare it, Michael, I'm sitting here in Washington, D.C. I compare it to across the Potomac River in Northern Virginia, in Arlington, rockets coming across the Potomac into Washington, D.C. That's what the Israelis are looking at with these pre-1967 borders. It's a no-go. It's insane. And I'm glad that Prime Minister Netanyahu stood forthrightly and said, no way. Obama is appeasing Hamas at every turn, Michael. Whether he knows it or not, he is empowering Hamas. Israel will not negotiate with Hamas. Yet Fatah, who is Israel's supposed partner for peace, has struck this unity deal with Hamas. So if Israel is going to negotiate with the Palestinians, that means Hamas would have to be at the table. Obama knows this. He seems to be holding out hope that Hamas will somehow magically renounce terrorism and throw their charter, their founding charter, out the window, which calls for the destruction of not only Israel, but Jews around the world, to hunt down Jews around the world, not just the Jewish state. This is who Hamas is. This is what they are all about. Yet Obama expects Israel to go to the negotiating table with them. Nothing demanded of the Palestinians, everything demanded of Israel, Michael. That's all we saw. And I have to say, this seems like a personal animus for Obama against Israel. People say, well, it's personal between Obama and Netanyahu. And if you saw that Oval Office press conference last week where Obama was staring a hole through Bibi as Bibi dressed him down, and rightfully so, lectured him, gave him a history lesson like a professor to a student in front of the cameras, if you saw Obama's expression and you saw just the visceral dislike that he has for Netanyahu, but Michael, it goes deeper than that. It's becoming increasingly clear that this is personal for Obama. This is a personal grudge, a personal dislike against Israel as a nation, not just Netanyahu as a man. Why else would Obama continue to stick his neck out on a limb, continue to up the ante against Israel? First it was settlements. Now it's the 1967 lines. Next it'll be the right of so-called right of return of Palestinian refugees. Next it'll be Jerusalem. He continues to do this against all political common sense. Even Democrats in his own party are against him on this. Even the likes of Harry Reid have spoken up against these pre-1967 lines. Yet Obama seems to not be able to help himself, Michael, because at the root of it, there is a personal dislike here, and he was weaned, let's remember, with pro-Palestinian activists, pro-Palestinian radicals. These were the circles he traveled in his formative years in Chicago. This is what shaped his worldview of Israel. He is deeply, deeply anti-Israel, and he can't help himself. He can't hide it.
How has a terrorist organization like Hamas gained national recognition as a legitimate party?
Hamas in 2006 was voted into power by the people of Gaza. Let's remember, Hamas did not violently seize power at first. Eventually they did. In 2007, they evicted Mahmoud Abbas's Palestinian Authority from Gaza. But let's remember, it was in 2006, Michael, that through quote-unquote free and fair elections, and we know they were free and fair because Jimmy Carter was there monitoring them, and he said so, through free and fair elections, Hamas gained power in 2006. They voted for them. The Palestinian people in Gaza, in the West Bank, knowing full well what Hamas was all about, Hamas's agenda, voted for them through legal means. This is who they are. The Palestinians do not recognize Israel's right to exist. That goes without saying. But they never will. They never will recognize Israel's right to exist. And it's so clear. And that's why I thought Netanyahu, Michael, did such a brilliant job here in Washington. There's a few prerequisites that he handed down. Number one, recognize Israel's right to exist. Palestinians, we'll come to the negotiating table and we'll give up land if you recognize Israel's right to exist. He knows that's never going to happen, Michael. The prime minister is playing a very shrewd political game here. He knows, number one, that the Palestinians will never recognize Israel's right to exist. Number two, that they will continue to insist on this so-called right of return, which would swamp Israel with Palestinians. It would cease to be a Jewish state. And he knows that the Palestinians will not cease in their demand for half of Jerusalem, which has been the capital of the Jewish people for 4,000 years. He knows it. So he can say, yes, we were willing to make painful concessions and give up some land. All you have to do is recognize our right to exist as a Jewish state. Bibi Netanyahu knows that the Palestinians will never, ever do that. And that's why he can stick his neck out on a limb and say things like that. And that's why I think his strategy here, Michael, in D.C. was so brilliant, really a masterful performance from his Oval Office dressing down of Obama to the speech before Congress. And, Michael, I was there at that speech, 29 standing ovations, both sides of the aisle, Democrats as well. So It was a masterful performance, and you just know that Obama is stewing because he not only dislikes Netanyahu, he dislikes Israel. This is only the beginning. Where will Obama up the ante next against Israel? Where's he going to draw the line next? It was settlements, then it was pre-67 lines. Next, maybe it's Jerusalem.
Do you actually think there are too many intractable issues for peace between Israel and Palestine?
The problem, and Prime Minister Netanyahu articulated this very clearly, the problem here is not Israel. Every Israeli you talk to when you're on the ground in Jerusalem, in Tel Aviv, in the so-called settlements where everyone's supposedly so radical and Arab and Muslim hating, which isn't true, when you talk to everyone on the ground in Israel, Michael, there is such a longing for peace. Enough war. It's been not only since 1948, it's been millennia of Israel under assault, and not only Israel, since biblical times, but not only Israel, the Jewish people worldwide have been massacred, slaughtered, victims of pogroms, genocides around the world. Enough is enough. We just want to live in peace. That is what Israelis will tell you. And if you had a willing partner in the Palestinians for peace, I'm sure Israel, the Palestinians, could work something out. But you're not dealing with rational people. The Palestinians are not rational people. Leave aside the fact that we're dancing in the streets and handing out candy after the 9/11 attacks. These are not rational people, and they don't want peace with Israel. They've shown not the slightest inclination. My God, they still can't say that they recognize Israel's right to exist as a nation. This is what Israel's dealing with. So there are many difficult issues, obviously, in the whole Israeli so-called Israeli-Palestinian conflict. But those issues are trumped by the simple fact, and I hate to keep beating a dead horse, Michael, but this is what it all boils down to, the simple fact that they do not recognize Israel's right to exist as a nation. You can't get anywhere if that's your starting point.
Eric Stackelback, thanks for being with us on The Savage Nation.
Michael, thank you. Always a pleasure to be here. And you can check out my show, Stackelback on Terror, at cbnnews.com. And the new book, The Terrorist Next Door, How the Government is Deceiving You About the Islamist Threat. You can buy it at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, anywhere. Thanks a lot.
This is The Savage Nation. I'll be back.
Savage.
About politics, but as I said to you last week, even though each of my days is a specialty day, it all the roads go back to politics. They all come and go from politics. There's nothing more political than health and nutrition. Look what Obama did to the greatest medical system in the world. So let me read you something that I remember hearing when I was a child. He who plays his fife and eats his way will live to fife another day. Now, what does that catchy rhyme mean? He who plays his fife and eats his way will live to fife another day. Well, it means that if you eat your way, you're getting certain nutrients which are life-giving and longevity-inducing. What is whey? It's the liquid remaining after the milk has been curdled and strained and turned into cheese. There's a liquid that remains, and it's usually discarded, I believe. Now, what's in the stuff that we throw out, called whey? Well, it's rich in so many things, riboflavin, B12, magnesium, potassium, zinc, selenium. So he who plays his fife and eats his whey will live to fife another day. It's the equivalent to eating whole grains as opposed to eating white bread. It's equivalent to eating brown rice as opposed to eating white rice. You know, beriberi was rampant in Asia when they ate white rice, until they found out that all of the nutrients that were being thrown out in the husk of the rice were the nutrients required to prevent, for example, rickets. You know, that's an old thing you learned in high school, probably. I don't even know if they teach that anymore. Right now, they give you a pill instead. Everything they tell you to eat garbage, live like a lab rat and take a pill. And then if you get sick, go to the quack and get six more pills. That's all. But those of us who actually studied foods and what's in them and want to know how to protect ourselves from disease have written books about it. So I remember, for example, there's another thing that's coming back to mind from my great book, 20, 30 years ahead of its time, called The Skeptical Nutritionist. And this was about another topic, if only I could remember it. I'm a little hungover, frankly, from last night. I went to a big dinner, took the dog, and I drank a lot of vodka. I feel great, don't get me wrong. Don't say it's hypocritical. I believe in vodka. But vodka's a health food if you don't do it every night, which I don't. So there was a subject in here that I wanted to find. Oh, I remember. It's, it's fava bean hemolysis. I know that's not on everyone's lips. It's a disease we know nothing about. But I remember when I uncovered it, when I was writing this book, how many doctors wrote me who were ahead of their time. They said, oh, my God, Savage, how did you do this? Where'd you find it? Well, I had just gotten my PhD from the University of California, and I was very just fascinated by ethnic diets. And I studied every arcane piece of literature there was, and I came up with some interesting things. And so I found this about fava beans. I've never eaten a fava bean ever since. Now, sometimes if I go in an Italian deli, you see fava beans, and they're fine if you're not, let us say, I shouldn't say allergic to them, but that's close to what I'm about to tell you. There are individuals who do not understand that they lack certain enzymes to break down the fava beans. It's called a G6PD deficiency. I know it's too technical for you, and I don't want to do it to you, but the fact is you get very sick eating fava beans. It's equivalent to acute hemolytic anemia. And you say you don't know what that is. I'm showing you what could happen when you eat certain foods that you're not aware, you're not even able to digest. For example, it's well known that Jews, most blacks, and most Asians cannot digest dairy products directly because they are deficient in the enzyme necessary to break down milk, the milk product known as lactose or milk sugar. Jews, black people, and Asians have very low amounts of lactase, so they are to avoid dairy. Did you know that? So the medical profession, instead of telling Jews, black people, and Asians, don't eat dairy, they tell them, take a pill with some lactate in it. The trick would be to avoid the dairy. Now, why would Jews, blacks, and Asians have evolved or adapted to a low dairy diets? Because there weren't high dairy diets in their traditional environs. There were just not high dairy diets. Basically, there weren't high dairy diets, so they adapted to not eating dairy, and they didn't develop the enzymes necessary to break down milk sugar. Now let's go to you. Many of you believe in raw foods because you're ignoramuses, and you think that you're an ant or a rat or some kind of animal in the plains. That's absurd. The fact is that you should eat cooked foods. You're a human being. It doesn't mean you shouldn't eat some vegetables or fruits that aren't cooked. But to think you should eat only raw foods is ludicrous. It's lunacy. It's another part of the folklore of the psychologically deficient liberal to think that raw foods are better for you. It's the equivalent of thinking that a gigantic bird will come from the sky and bring you back to paradise. But actually, I want to talk about food instead. And that is the issue of how ethnic foods are very important, both to know what to eat and what not to eat. I'm coming up with something very, very small here. It's called fava bean hemolysis. And there are people who cannot eat fava beans because they lack the correct enzyme to break down fava beans. And what happens? The urine becomes very dark or red. Shock may develop in bad cases, and death can follow. Did you know that? This condition is caused by a lack of glucose 6-phosphate dehydrogenase. That's an enzyme that breaks down the fava bean. G6PD. You don't have G6PD if you are a Kurd, for example. There are people called the Kurds, as you all know. In the north of Iraq, there's a whole land called Kurdistan. And the Kurds have one of the highest frequencies of this disorder on record. And favism, which I just described, affects individuals with a Mediterranean phenotype. And hemolysis can occur within only a few hours of inhaling even the pollen of fava bean plants, or within 1 or 2 days of eating fresh or dried fava beans. So if you are a Kurd, don't eat fava beans. You say, well, what does it have to do with me? I'm not a Kurd. I don't know. Maybe you are the type of individual who has a Mediterranean background, and you also are deficient in G6PD, and you may have a hemolytic reaction and not even know it. You go to the hospital, you have dark urine, red urine, you have shock, and you don't know it's because you just ate a fava bean salad in an Italian deli. I'm trying to warn you that this kind of knowledge was known back in ancient times, going back to antiquity. As far back as Pythagoras in the 6th century BC, 6th century before Christ, people were warned that eating this type of bean could yield death. And in the 5th century B.C., Herodotus also mentioned favism. Now, you've forgotten it, though, because we don't know anything about food in this country, of this nature, I mean. All we know is what looks good on a plate. We have geniuses who go to cooking school with pimples on their face, and they come out as long as they know how to drizzle olive oil on something and put strawberries and raspberries on steak, they think that they're a genius. But in this century, acute hemolytic anemia was reported in 1926 in a Panamanian plantation population. Well, I don't want to go into it because it's too complicated. Maybe you've learned something. But here is another example of the classic one man's meat is another man's poison. And we can all learn from this and remember not to put down our friends who may find some of our most magical food combinations totally repugnant. Because the abhorrence of our favorite food can often reflect a survival instinct which we must learn to respect. Did you like that? This is all from page 29 of The Skeptical Nutritionist, not in print, so I'm not selling you anything, unlike Wallbanger or those who sell floor mats at every turn. I'm giving you information for free because it's important to do. Now, what if you're not of a Kurdish background? I'm going to just read a little bit more to you. You don't want to hear any more about that. Did you know that I can tell you what they studied, Arabs with this and Jews and this and that? I don't think Christians are affected by this at all. I think they can eat anything. I get the feeling the cracker can eat most anything. And that's why they live on mayonnaise, white bread, and scotch. Good genetic stock. They don't worry about G6PD deficiency because they never eat the stuff. They wouldn't be caught dead near a fava bean. Give them a white bread sandwich with mayonnaise and a nice scotch, and that's it. They're happy as a Maasai eating the blood of an ox. I think that's funny, and so I'm making myself laugh. I sound like a nutty professor now.
Savage.